Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, are Muslims easily offended?
Over recent years, millions of Muslims across the globe have been forced to protest anti-Islamic hate campaigns. The latest campaign is an offensive American amateur film mocking and ridiculing an Islamic holy figure, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. Offensive cartoons of the Prophet were also published in France this year. A similar act took place in 2005 by a Danish cartoonist. A British Channel 4 documentary questioning the authenticity of the origins of Islam received huge numbers of complaints in August. The network was forced to cancel the repeat of the episode. Likewise, over 700 complaints were received only 4 episodes into the BBC's new sitcom Citizen Khan. Viewers claim the Asian family featured misrepresents Islam and scenes of racism and anti-Islamic sentiment are prevalent throughout. In 1988, The Satanic Verses, a blasphemous fiction book which insulted the Prophet amongst other holy figures and violated the concept of monotheism in Islam, caused mass riots. This week's Islam and Life asks, are Muslims easily offended?
This is an important question for Muslims, and it's also an important question when it comes to the relationship between Muslims and the West, or Western Muslims within their society, when they are told that in the name of freedom of expression, Muslims should accept to see their religion being ridiculed and people talking about religions or talking about Islam in a way which is usual in Western secular society. And at the same time, for Muslims, it's quite important to look at the situation in Muslim-majority countries after the Salman Rushdie affair when it started in 89, and then in many, many other situations, and we all heard, of course, about the cartoon issues and controversy in Denmark, where people at the end were killed in Pakistan, in Muslim-majority countries. So at the end, we are facing something which is protecting freedom of expression and having people being killed. And we have in the West questions coming from people saying, why do Muslims are reacting in such a way? Why such a violence in the streets? How could you explain this? And some other Muslims responding by saying that this is not always the case, even though they condemn the violence in the streets, they don't agree with what is done in the name of freedom of expression. So there are many questions that we have to address, and it's quite important to try to understand what are the Islamic principles and in which way we deal with the West. And to answer all these questions, I am joined by a senior researcher at the Islamic Education and Research Academy, Hamza Zorgis. Thank you so much for being with us today. Let me start with the first question, which is every 6 months now, it seems that we have a new controversy. At the beginning, it started in 88, but the controversy was real in 89 with the Rushdie affair. And then 10 years later, or a bit more, we had the cartoon issues. And now the speed is everything is faster. Every 6 months, we have a controversy dealing with freedom of expression. So how do you deal with all this? How do you understand all these controversies when it comes to freedom of expression?
That's a big question. I think from my limited understanding, what we have to understand is that in order for Muslims to interact positively with the Western narrative, we have to understand where the Western narrative has come from, which is about empathy. Because if you empathize with the other, you know where they came from, you know the intellectual tradition and the issues in Europe, especially when they had the Catholic Church at that time. It was using the coercive arm of the state to basically stop people from thinking or developing doctrines that were antithetical to the teachings of the Catholic tradition. This is why you had Martin Luther, he pegged on a church door in Wittenberg, his thesis attacking the Catholic tradition, and many theorists and political commentators, like Professor John Chauvet from the London School of Economics, he says this was a milestone to create things like the 80-year wars, the religious wars, the 30-year wars, the massacre on St. Bartholomew's Day. Europe was a nightmare. And you had the post-Enlightenment thinkers, and you had John Stuart Mill, who's saying liberty, you have to have expression, and it has to be free. But in that context, even the likes of John Stuart Mill, who's like the apostle of the liberal tradition, what did he say? He said, you still have to be moral. If you want to have a discourse with people, you have to have civil discourse. And civil discourse is contingent, it's pegged on a sense of common morality. So Muslims argue, look, we're not saying you can't express yourself. We're not saying that you can't have intellectual debate and dialogue. Because in the Islamic tradition, even from the early centuries, we had debates with the Dahriya. They were the naturalists or the atheists at the time. So we're not afraid of debate and dialogue. However, if you want to discuss, we have to appreciate both sensitivities on both sides.
But this is the point that what you have when we talk about this. For example, we say about now to ridicule religions is not some only legal in the Western understanding and the Western history. Now it's part of what is presented as a culture. And when you react the way you react, or you say, okay, as a Muslim, we are not against freedom of speech, but we don't like what you are doing, the perception is, and I'm talking here about perception, and this is what we have to talk about, is, oh, it means that you are not integrated into the Western culture. You might be citizens, but there is something which is wrong in your understanding, because we do this with Jews, we do this with Christians, we do this with Buddhists. Why not with Muslims? In fact, you are reacting, and it's as if this is the very question of our program today. You are too easily offended because you are not integrated. What would you would be your answer to this?
Well, first and foremost, there are a lot of common values between the Eastern and Western tradition, but Islam is a very distinct tradition. It's almost like its own worldview from that particular perspective. So when you have the Muslims trying to integrate, it doesn't mean we have to assimilate totally. So it doesn't mean we have to say, right, we're giving up our values now. So we see where the commonality lies, but you also say, look, here we draw the line. So when it comes to freedom of speech, we say, well, in reality, there is no absolute freedom of speech. There's restrictions in every secular liberal country. So we're saying we should have a new definition here. We should articulate a positive case for civil discourse in the West, because we are the West. I'm the West. I'm Greek. I was born in London. I'm British. So I am the West. So I'm saying I disagree with this perspective. I don't think we should have free rein on any tradition and religion. This is not civil discourse. This is not a manifestation of civilization.
Let me ask you one question here, because it's legal. Now we can ridicule a religion, and this is part of the perceived freedom of expression in the West. What you are saying is that, okay, you are a European, you are a Western Muslim. What you want is for us Europeans to come back to something which is prohibition to freedom of expression, which is exactly what is said by populists. They say, these Muslims, they are coming here to change our identity. By saying what you are saying, it could be perceived like this. Are you saying you want less freedom for the people?
No, of course not.
So explain the point here,
because it's essential. Well, this is the irony. The irony is, even if you go to Wikipedia or the academic journals concerning freedom of speech, where did it come from? It was actually influenced by the Muslims, the irony, in the 9th century, from the Islamic Caliphate, because it said, look, let's have intellectual debate and dialogue. We don't have the same historical baggage that Europe had. So for us to go against intellectual expression and dialogue is going against our own tradition, and we don't want to do that. But what we're saying is this: if we want civil discourse in a society, and if we want to fulfill the objectives of freedom of speech, because let's go back to John Stuart Mill. What did he say? He said, speech must be free, so we have the competition of ideas to facilitate truth, progress, and accountability. So Dr. Ramadan, Sheikh Ramadan, if I said to you, if I were to account you, say you did some bad things, you were a politician and you did something wrong, and in order for me to account you, I start swearing at you, being vile, using degrading language, and being dishonorable to your family. Is that an effective way of accounting you? No. So freedom to insult has actually gone against the very objectives of freedom of speech, which was to account. Take progress. Say Stephen Hawking, for example, he wanted to talk about M theory or string theory concerning physics, and he started using pornographic imagery. Would his freedom to insult and degrade facilitate the objectives of freedom of speech? No. So it's self-defeating. Philosophically, self-defeating.
Yes, but this is the very important point that you are making, guys. And sometimes the European and the Western Muslims are failing to do so. Is in fact the way we can respond to this question is to reconcile the West with its own values. Because in fact we are not alien to this discussion.
Of
because decency and respect is something which is important. And we have sometimes the media pressure. For example, we had the cartoon controversy in France with Charlie Hebdo publishing it. 51% of the French people were against, saying it's not the right time to do this. It's legal, but why are you doing this? And myself, I was asking Charlie Hebdo, if it's not for the sake of money, because you have money problem, you know, your magazine is not going well, so give the money to victims of, you know, violent extremists in Mali, for example. We see if it's really about freedom of expression. And I think that this is something which is important in the whole discussion, that to enter, you talked about empathy. It has to do with psychology, but also reconciling the West with values, because it's very often in contradiction with its own values that Muslims are attacked. Now there is another question, which is part of our discussion, is that the Muslims in Muslim-majority countries are demonstrating there are acts of violence, and the people are saying, oh, the Muslims are very quickly offended, and the way they react is through violence and even going as far as killing people. What would be your reaction? As you said, you are a European Muslim. What would be the right reaction, and how do you assess what is done in the name of Islam?
Well, empathy goes both ways. So what we have to understand as well is, let's understand the Islamic tradition. In the Islamic tradition, we love Muhammad, upon whom be peace, more than our mothers and our fathers and our family. This is a credo issue in the Islamic tradition. So in a way, some of the emotional responses may be justified, or you can have empathy with them. However, going against the Sharia...
Can you explain this? Can be justified or can be explainable? Or is it the same for you?
Well, for example, if I get angry, if you insult Muhammad, upon whom be peace, I think that's justified. But if I use violence, that's not justified.
Okay.
Because we have a framework called the Sharia, called the Islamic law. Killing ambassadors is against the Sharia. The Prophet Muhammad, upon whom be peace, never killed any ambassador, even the ambassadors of Musaylimah, who was a fake prophet at the time. So the point is, we have to be restrained within our ethical tradition, which is the Sharia, the Quran, the prophetic teachings. So the point is, yeah, sometimes it's okay to get emotional, because human beings are emotional by nature. But as a collective response, what do we do? In my humble opinion, from a Western perspective, we have to intellectualize. We have to use this opportunity, not just to react, but be proactive. So we call people to the amazing values of our tradition. This is what the Quran says, "Udu'u ila sabili rabbik." Call to the way of God, the divine reality. So we know what the metaphor...
And bil hikmah, which is with wisdom,
of course,
which is the point, is the point that you are making.
So with wisdom and good speech, and argue, debate, or articulate with them in the best manner. So this is what we want to do. And this is what we try to do in the Islamic Education and Research Academy. Instead of marching and protesting, which is fine, we may need to have political outlets and to manifest our political energy. That's correct. However, it has to be done within the framework of Islam, which is not killing people and harming people. But what we did is we took this opportunity and said, look, who was Muhammad? People don't say nothing about Gandhi in a negative way. Why? Because they know his life. In the West, people say bad things about Muhammad, upon whom be peace, because they don't know who this man was. They don't know how this man from the 7th century Arabia actually affected the whole of the world, the whole of the universe, concerning politics, theology, science, progress. Even the reason we have an iPhone is because of the Muhammad, upon whom be peace. Because if you go back to Professor Thomas Arnold, he said if it wasn't for Islamic Spain that had the teachings of Muhammad, upon whom be peace, we would never have the scientific revolution and renaissance. Do you see? So we need to teach the West who Muhammad was, upon whom be peace. He was a mercy. And this is why I would articulate attacking Muhammad, upon whom be peace, is attacking mercy itself.
So that's fine. But still, what if we assess the situation, and I kept on repeating to people, to journalists and people that I was meeting when we had this, I was in the state when we had this video, saying, look, the way the people are reacting in the streets, my position on this was it's explainable. Yes. You can understand why. Because there are many, you know, dimensions in their own frustration, because there is the reality of them reacting because they are facing their own problems there. No freedom, and sometimes the freedom is very limited. And they see people who are wealthy and in very comfortable situation in the West mocking what is so sacred for them. So yes. There is here something that we have to understand without justifying violence, which is what you are saying. Now, how are you going to talk to these Muslims at the grassroots level? They are not going to just implement the verses that and the verse, you know, talk to them in a wise way and act in a wise way, because to intellectualize is not going to come from the grassroots. The perception in the West is that Islam is not only the people who are going who are going to intellectualize the whole thing, is people in the streets. What can we do for this? What would be your answer to people saying they are too easily offended?
We are a tradition of honor as well. Anthropologists discuss societies as honor societies or law societies. And we are actually a law society and an honor society as well. So there are some things that we hold dear and that are very sacred. And because in the secular tradition, the sacredness of things has been diminished from that perspective. Mm. There's no metaphysical reality that makes things objective from that perspective, okay? Yeah. Mm. So I appreciate from the secular lenses, it may be seen that we are very sensitive. But if you see it from the lenses of Islam, via a metaphysical reality, like the divine exists, the Quran is this book from the divine, it's his announcement to mankind, then people would agree, you know what, they do take something seriously. They want to have an intellectual debate and dialogue, but they do take things seriously. So I think from the grassroots perspective, the leaders in the Muslim community, the scholars, the speakers, the organizers, whatever the case may be, they have to take intellectual social leadership and say, this is how we react to such issues. So what we try to do, for example, we said, let's go on the streets and actually smile, be warm, have good adab, akhlaq, morals, and articulate who Muhammad was, upon whom be peace.
But this
isn't that the best way of doing this, rather than going crazy and not even telling them about our tradition?
But this is a very good point. The point is that what we saw is also Muslim scholars and leaders not acting that way. You know, just after what happened in Egypt and then in Yemen and then in Pakistan, I wrote an article about a call for the contemporary Muslim conscience, asking the leaders, asking the scholars, the ulama, to be more courageous, sometimes to face their own people by saying, that's not the way to react. We need to go beyond this. Our answer should be much more beautified than what they are doing to us. And this is coming from the Quran, it's coming from the prophetic example. Do you think that there is something that we have to do? It's just to keep this sensitivity, but to direct it in another way.
Totally agree. I mean, from my perspective, I think the way we direct it is actually calling people to a beautiful tradition in a beautiful way. And it's as simple as that. Just like what the Prophet Muhammad, upon whom be peace, did when he had poets at the time of Mecca attacking him, he actually kept silent. This is the fact. Hmm. He kept silent.
He was not reacting to everything.
He only did something about it. Not when he had Medina, when he then took Mecca. Then he forgave that particular poet, for example. Hmm. Obviously, the Sharia is quite nuanced and has different contexts, as we agree. But sometimes we act as if we have political power from that perspective. We frankly don't have that political power. So we have to act in a way how the Prophet Muhammad, upon whom peace, wanted to react at that in this particular context, which I truly believe is calling people to our beautiful tradition. But at the same time, Doctor, I think we also have to expose the political duplicity as well. Because if you don't, then people will be frustrated. We're not speaking what the frustrations are in the Muslim community. For example, take France. There was a cartoonist who wrote about the son of Sarkozy. He was sacked. He was lambasted because of political sensitivities. But when it comes to the Prophet Muhammad, upon him be peace, it's free reign. So we have to really highlight and say, look, you have to either agree with your own principles and apply them properly, or you have to explain yourself, because these are valid issues that the Muslim community see the duplicit behavior.
Yes, it's wisdom about ourselves and not being naive about the agenda of the people who are attacking.
No, of course.
This is something which is central. My last question here is, what we saw, you know, in the streets in Muslim majority countries sometimes was violent, and we talked about it right now. What is the role of Western Muslims? Because we haven't seen in the West, you know, even with, you know, fitna from Geert Wilders in the Netherlands, even in Denmark with the Carter, we haven't seen violence. We have seen also very, very wise positioning. Do the Muslims or the Western Muslims have a specific role in helping these to move on in a positive way? What would be your take on that?
Well, the Muslims in the West have a huge influential role. I mean, even the small things that we did on the street concerning articulating a positive case for Islam and the prophethood of the Prophet Muhammad, upon him be peace, we had emails and correspondence with people in the East being motivated and thinking, wow, you know, it's not all about the straw that broke the camel's back. I don't have to be frustrated anymore. There is an outlet on how to manifest this energy and love that I have for Muhammad, upon whom be peace. So they see that and they see us as role models. But also I think particularly the Muslims in the East, what they should do is they should also try and create an environment as best as they can in the Muslim world, so we have the correct political structures and transparency and the correct political leadership that could also take the community in the East in the right direction when it comes to these issues. Because if you think about it, most of these issues get politicized anyway. We had Obama talking about this. This director in California is a nobody. He's in prison now for some other charges or something. So he's a riffraff. But it's become politicized. So these issues become politicized. So what we have to do is support our brothers and sisters in the East so we could have accountable, transparent governments that are in line with our own tradition. I think if we have that, then we'll have a political entity, state-backed entity, that will be able to manifest Islam in the positive way. That's maybe idealistic. But the point is, why not?
Thank you so much. I think that during this discussion, what is important in what you are saying, and I think that the whole understanding is, the starting point is to understand the West, understanding the history of the West, not meaning by this that accepting everything. It's with our ethical background, our understanding is to challenge the West, not against the West, but in the name of the very essence of the Western values, which are also, and you said it, shared values. This is something which is important. The second thing, which it's also very important as to the reaction, is to go beyond an emotional reaction, understanding what is happening in Muslim majority countries, not denying the fact that they are sensitive and this has to be respected, but the best way is an intellectual reaction and something which has to be an articulated reaction with wisdom. And the last point, which I think is critical here to be heard by the Muslims also, is not to be naive about some people who have a specific agenda. It's not all about ignorance. It's also about ideology, and some are populist, racist, and Islamophobic. And I think that the point that you are making here, it's also important in this connection between East and West, and Western Muslims have a critical role. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen. And here is the way to contact us.
Islam and Life welcomes your opinion. So please send us your suggestions as well as criticism on any of the shows you have seen or you would like to see. You can do all this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also be part of our online platform by joining our Facebook page, Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can share your thoughts with other Islam and Life fans, engage with debate, and view past shows.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Hamza Dzordzis. Thank you so much for your presence and your input and insight with us today. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah. We'll be right back.